It's time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitten Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Here are your hosts, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes.
Welcome back to another episode of Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. Good morning on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and you're about to get ready to hear me talk about Michigan sports for the next hour. So if you are not ready, you better get ready because it's about to be a fun ride. This week we're going to be talking Tigers like we have been all spring and summer long as they've continued to be one of the best teams in baseball. We're going to get into football, both the NFL and college, get a look at what we're expected to see from the Lions, the Spartans, and the Wolverines over this season. And then we're going to touch on the WNBA before they get into their playoffs. And well, that isn't quite Michigan related, but it's Michigan adjacent, as there will be a Detroit team in the next couple of years. And then we'll get into our picks as always to wrap things up. I am doing well. Lacrosse is lacrosse. Had tryouts last week. Got some pop-up clinics going down this week. The playoffs are about to start for lacrosse. This week is the last regular season week. So I'm excited for the weekend that is coming up, watching some great lacrosse, hanging out with family and friends, doing some important events. So I hope that your weekend is just as fun as mine is going to be. But now that we've gotten through the obligatories, it's time for us to talk the most important parts of Michigan sports. Let's start with those Detroit Tigers, and you know where we are starting first. We're starting with our standings in the MLB. We'll start in the AL in the Central. The Tigers have struggled recently. They're 66-50. They're on a two-game losing streak, and they're 6-4 in their last 10, but they do still hold a six-game lead on the Guardians, who are 59-55. The Kansas City Royals are 57-58, which is 8.5 games back from the Tigers. 11 games back from the Tigers are the Twins, who are 54-60. And then 23.5 games behind the Tigers at 42-73 are the Chicago White Sox. In the AL East, the Blue Jays still sit up top at 68-48. At 64-52, four games behind them are the Boston Red Sox. And the New York Yankees are 6.5 games behind the Blue Jays at 61-54. In the AL West, the Houston Astros still lead the pack 64-51 on the year. 1.5 games behind them are the Seattle Mariners at 63-53. And with a 60-56 record, 4.5 games behind the Houston Astros are the Texas Rangers. Going down to the NL in the West, the Dodgers up top 66-49. 2 games behind them at 64-51 are the San Diego Padres. Meanwhile, the San Francisco Giants are 58-57, which is 8 games behind the Dodgers. In the East, the Phillies are back atop the division, 65-49. 2.5 games behind them are the New York Mets at 63-52. And the Miami Marlins sit at 56-58, 9 games behind the Phillies. In the NL Central, the Brewers have jumped the Cubs. They're 70-44. 4 games behind them now are the Cubs, 66-48. While the Reds sit 11 games behind the Brewers at 60-56. When we look at the league overall, the Tigers have continued to drop. They are now outside of the top five at 66-50, 5 games behind the Brewers, who are at the top. Then the Blue Jays come in behind them, just 3 games behind the Brewers, 4 games for the Cubs, 4.5 games for the Dodgers, and 5 games for the Phillies, who are technically a half game above the Tigers at 65-49. So obviously the Tigers are comfortably in the playoffs at that 66-50. In the AL, they're second, so they're going to be definitely sitting at a playoff spot. They're hosting a playoff series at the moment. Would love to see them as the number one overall seed. But also in recent years, the one seed has had trouble after that bye and such. So maybe they don't want the one seed. Either way, the Tigers have no worries of being in that wild card concern or not making the playoffs. They are firmly hosting a playoff seed at the moment. Of course, now that we have our standings, it's time to talk about our team leaders and the statistics. Riley Green leads the team in home runs with 26, and he's got 84 runs batted in, while his batting average is just 266. Leading the batting average category, Gleyber Torres, batting a 273, has an OBP of 369. Nice. And a slugging percentage of 424. Meanwhile, on the pitching side, we almost don't even have to do it because we know it's Tarek Skubal. He's got a 218 ERA, 11 wins on the year with 181 strikeouts. The Tigers are in trouble, though. They're coming off two series losses. They had a 1-2 series loss to the Phillies. Phillies won game one of that series 55-4, and then they won the third game of that series 2-0. The Tigers were able to snatch up the second game 7-5, and then they rolled into a series against the Twins where they are winning the first game 6-3. They lose the second game, that exact score 6-3, and then dropped the third game as well 9-4. So they're just 2-4. 2-4 in their last six games. But then you add the previous four games before that, a sweep of the Diamondbacks and one win against the Blue Jays gives them 6-4 in their last 10. So they're not doing terrible, but it's not the Tigers that we have been used to this year. We're used to them winning more series than they have lost. They got swept by the Pirates before getting a gentleman's sweep of the Blue Jays. So it's really, really starting to catch up with them. The bats really aren't going the way that they were before, but there are still some highlights. You know, a 10-4 win, a 12-2 win, a 7-2 win, 7-5 win, 6-3. We're putting up runs at the same time, but in other games, they're not. And that's the main concern, is that when Skubal's not on the mound, it's hard for them to win games because they can't put up enough runs. The bats have to continue going if the Tigers want to continue to see success throughout this year. Jumping into their full schedule coming up this week, they're going to be taking on the Los Angeles Dodgers. First game was yesterday in that series as Skubal took on Hendricks for a 7-10 first pitch. Morton and Kikuchi are on the mound tonight for a 6-10 first pitch. And Casey Mize will take on Kochenowick at 1:40 p.m. tomorrow. All of these games are at Comerica Park. Another chance for the Tigers to win a home series and get back on the winning track as they've done so at home, especially when their next series is going to be on the road and there's no days of rest because they play Sunday tomorrow, but then they'll play again on Monday, 7:40 p.m. Paddock will be on the mound against Cannon as the Tigers travel on over to Chicago over on the west side so that they can play the Chicago White Sox at Guaranteed Rate Field. Flaherty will be on the mound against Smith on Tuesday for a 7:40 first pitch, and Skubal and Savelle will be on the mound against each other at 2:10 p.m. on Wednesday for the third game of that series. Then there's a four-game series against the Twins over the weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday next week, 7:40 first pitch on Thursday, Morton against Ober. Meanwhile, the Twins are undecided on who they will put on the mound next Friday for a 7:15 first pitch on Fox, as Mize will step on for the Tigers. Saturday, 7:15 p.m. That's the game on Fox. The Friday game is an 8:10 first pitch. Paddock will take on Matthews. And then Sunday, 2:10 first pitch, Flaherty will go against undecided as the Tigers will look to bounce back from their 2-1 loss to the Twins last week and look to win four and take the lead in that series. They win all four, they lead that series 5-2. Even if they win three, they lead that series 4-3. So you're looking to just come out on top of that series 3-1 or better so that you can own the season series against the Twins. The Tigers have a lot of work to do. We're going to take a look at the Angels series before we talk about the White Sox series, because, I mean, we kind of know what we're expecting in the White Sox. So this is going to be so tough for the Tigers. Give me just a second. Pulling up what we're expected. Hendricks and Schoolboy, I think we kind of know what we're getting is the Angels are 55-60 on the year. It's almost a complete opposite of what the Tigers are on the year. The Tigers are 66-50, 37-23 when playing at Comerica Park. The Tigers have a 76.1% chance to win last night's game. Taylor Ward has 26 home runs, a .231 average for 84 RBIs as he leads the team in RBIs and home runs. Their batting average leader, Nolan Chanel, .274 on the average, .362 on the OBP, .395 for the slugging percentage. Pitching leaders, Yusei Kikuchi, .322 on the ERA, 5 wins, 139 strikeouts. Jose Soriano has 7 wins, a 4.01 ERA for 119 strikeouts. And Kikuchi leads the team in strikeouts as well. The Tigers definitely have an opportunity to win this series, but it's going to be an uphill battle. We're going to talk football when we come back from the break with more Mid Madness on 95.3. Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. We're done talking about the Tigers for now. It's time for us to talk some football. We're looking at how things are going to be ranking for teams over the entire college football landscape. All 136 FBS teams were put into tiers. We're going to talk about where all of the Big Ten teams land and if they actually deserve to be in those tiers or not. Tier 1A, Ohio State lands in 1A. Tier 1B, Oregon and Penn State. In Tier 2, which is teams with playoff expectations, Michigan finds themselves slotted there. No one in Tier 3, as it pretty much is all SEC teams. Tier 4, last year's playoff surprises. Obviously, Indiana is slotted in there. So hot right now, you got Illinois flying beneath the radar. Minnesota and Washington both have a chance to make some splashes in the college football realm. Continuing on through Tier 10A, the Big Ten's ticking clocks has Nebraska, USC, and Wisconsin. Potential sleepers has Rutgers, which is an interesting team to throw into the mix. Even Stevens, teams that are expected to go exactly 500, Maryland and Michigan State and UCLA are all included in this list. Room for improvement has Northwestern. None of the group of six with upside. Purdue makes at least you tried. And that may be the last team as I continue to look through this list. Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan, and Western all make the best entertainment you're likely to find on a Tuesday night in mid-November. And that's it. Yeah. So first off, let's scroll back to the top of this list. And let's talk first. 1A, a great matchup for week one and or the championship game is Ohio State. Obviously, last year, Ohio State won the championship. And according to virtually every coach they've asked, the Buckeyes were the most talented team in the country the entire time. Only in the playoff, had they waited one more year to expand, Ohio State would have missed out. And Ryan Day might have been looking for a job. They posed the question it might apply to the Buckeyes again in 2025. With a bevy of veterans off to the NFL from the 2024 National Championship team, a fresh-faced quarterback taking over the offense, it's entirely reasonable to think Ohio State might need a few weeks to get it rolling again. The only problem is Texas is waiting for them in week one. The rest of the best, Oregon and Penn State, are both slotted into this list. I don't think that's wrong. At Oregon, Dan Lanning turns to Dante Moore, the former prize recruit for UCLA, who learned behind Dylan Gabriel last year. Moore has ample talent to get the job done, and if he struggles early, there's a 20% chance Phil Knight bribes Tom Brady to come out of retirement, don a fake mustache, and use the name Dom Frady to lead the Ducks to a title. And then obviously there's Drew Aller, who enters his second year with the offensive coordinator Andy Kotelnicki alongside arguably the most talented supporting cast in the Big Ten. The pressure is on for Allen, who has been very good but not entirely elite to finish the job. We can't help but feel like Penn State replacing the old press box at Beaver Stadium is exactly the type of cursed-ending decision Aller and the Nittany Lions needed to change their futures. Now those teams with playoff expectations, which Michigan found themselves in. Michigan's schedule is certainly accommodating. The only team on the docket to finish 2024 with more than 7 wins is Ohio State on the final Saturday of the regular season. Michigan also has QB questions, with freshman Bryce Underwood considered the likely starter. Last season's offensive woes led to 5 losses on the heels of a national title, so getting the QB choice right is imperative for them to continue making those strides forward like they would. Indiana and Arizona State both went from 3 wins to double digits in the entire playoff era. That had only happened one other time at a Power 5 school, and that was Michigan State in 2017. So, yes, the playoff expansion was key here, but it's true, too, that the era of name, image, and likeness, the transfer portal, and bloated conferences that equate to the disparate schedules set the stage for far more volatility in the standings than ever. The top end of the bell curve might remain static at 4 or 5 elite teams, but the meat of it continues to get wider. Illinois is one of those teams that has plenty of buzz around it, including Indiana. If the implication that the Illini could be a surprise playoff team out of the Big Ten, and it makes sense. But the key difference here is that Indiana came out of nowhere to go 11-1 last regular season, and Illinois run into the playoff would be far less shocking. The Illini went 10-3 last season with 2 losses coming to playoff teams. They beat Michigan, which the transitive property makes them national champs, and South Carolina, which doesn't count for much, but the SEC doesn't care less about meaningless bowls. Brett Bielema has built something that looks an awful lot like his old Wisconsin teams, veteran QB, heavy dose of the run game behind a massive O-line and stout defense, capable of competing with nearly anyone. Of course, those Wisconsin teams were notable for being routinely good, but never quite great. How high is the ceiling for Bielema in Illinois at the current moment? Minnesota and Washington are both included in teams that could be flying under the radar. Not counting the 2020 COVID-19 season, Minnesota is one of just 15 teams to win 60% of its Power 5 games. That's more impressive than it sounds. It's better than Washington, Tennessee, Ole Miss, Miami, and Texas A&M. The Gophers enter 2025 with a ton of intriguing options, led by Core Parrish and Darius Taylor. And while the scheduling includes road trips to Ohio State and Oregon, there's certainly a path for PJ Fleck to get Minnesota back to the 10-win plateau. Meanwhile, Washington is a work in progress. In year one under Jed Fish, the Huskies floundered to a 6-7 record, including losses to Washington State and Rutgers, but Desmond Williams Jr. looks like a difference maker at quarterback and is worth remembering that at Arizona, Fish went from a completely non-competitive 1-11 in year one to 5-7 in year two with one of the most impressive teams in the country. Washington might still be a year away, but it wouldn't be a surprise if the Huskies take a big leap forward now before threatening in the Big Ten in future years. Nebraska, USC, and Wisconsin have Matt Rhule, Lincoln Riley, and Luke Fickell leading the helm as their absolute home run coach hires. Setting aside Riley's 11-1 start to his tenure at USC, the three are now a combined 40-39 overall with a 20-32 record in Big Ten play since 2022. This has put all three in a position to make 2025 a must-win year. What exactly winning means probably differs at each school. Nebraska might be the best equipped to take the leap, as Dylan Raiola is leading the helm of the offense for year two in his first full season with Dana Holgorsen calling the plays. Add in that at some point, Nebraska's run of awful luck in close games has to swing the other way, and it's unfathomable that the Huskers are in the mix for a playoff bid. For Wisconsin, it's a return to the Badgers' foundation as Fickell has abandoned plans to bring an up-tempo passing attack to the stodgy Big Ten and will build around the ground game. At USC, Riley lost a ton of big-name talent in the portal and will move forward with the QB who has 19 touchdown passes and 17 turnovers and 9 career starts against teams with a winning record. Rutgers is a potential sleeper. Each of the past two seasons, they've gone 6-6 with a 4-game losing streak in the mix. Then they won a bowl game. Usually that would count as a real success at a place like Rutgers, but Coach Greg Schiano clearly has higher aspirations. The Scarlet Knights might have talent to push for bigger things in 2025. Maryland, Michigan State, and UCLA are all expected to be even Steven. Since 2018, Michigan State is 41-41. That includes a season of 11-2 and 4-8. Meanwhile, UCLA is 66-64 in the playoff era, averaging 29.6 points and surrendering 29.1 points per game. Pretty self-explanatory what we see happening in front of us with those teams. And then Northwestern, obviously the Wildcats struggled in year one under Brett Brennan, but they bring back Noah Fifita at the QB and showed enough life that a step forward in 2025 is not unrealistic. We'll see what we get from the rest of the Big Ten, as Purdue is, well, Purdue don't, so they'll just show themselves out as the season progresses. But quickly touching on the NFL for a second, obviously the Tigers or the Lions did not do well in their first preseason game, but they are playing a game last night as we're listening to this against the Falcons. We'll see what happens. We'll talk about that again next week when we get into it. But looking at the game cast for this game, there's no clue who's going to start where. Obviously, they only have the backups getting any type of stats from that Hall of Fame game that they lost to the Chargers. The Lions are currently a 3.5-point spread, and they're 190 on the money line, even though this game is on the road at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia. No Rakestraw, no Lovett, no Robichaux, no Jones, no Jackson for the Lions. But that does not mean that they can't win this game. I would expect the starters to at least get a quarter in this game, so that could get help if they're able to get out to a nice lead to start this game. Then maybe the Lions are able to hold on to this one. It is a warm-up game for them, but it is the very first time any of the Falcons will be touching on the field at all, so that may make a difference as well. No one ever gets super hyped up about the preseason. It's not this big thing that you have to worry about. If you do well, okay. If you do bad, okay. It's the preseason, and it means literally nothing. As long as no one gets hurt, it means nothing. You get a chance to get warmed up, but that's it. Week one is where it really counts, and that's what everybody's looking forward to. This is just sharpening you for week one. So if the Lions go 0-4, don't worry. As a Packers fan, we went 0-4 the year we won the Super Bowl. So it does not mean anything if you don't win anything in the preseason. It doesn't mean anything if you win every game of the preseason. It just means you had a good or a bad preseason. We're going to talk more about WNBA when we get back from the break. For now, we got more Mid Madness coming your way on 95.3.
Detroit sports fans, Wolverines and Spartans alike, this is your sports show, Mitten Madness, with Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes on 95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. We're going to talk a little bit about the WNBA because we really don't have anything else to talk about. Their playoffs are going to be coming up very soon, and the trade deadline just passed. There's only 5 weeks remaining in the regular season. A few teams made some moves. DeJounte Carrington traded to the Minnesota Lynx. They're looking to return to the finals. The Mystics hit the reset button as they traded Brittany Sykes to the Seattle Storm for Alicia Clark. And they're also sending Aaliyah Edwards to the Connecticut Sun. Only three games separate the New York Liberty, who are in the number two spot in the East, from the number five spot, the Indiana Fever, with the Atlanta Dream and the Phoenix Mercury between the two of them. Perhaps the most interesting chunk of the playoff race is taking place at the bottom half of the standings between the Storm, Aces, Valkyries, and Sparks and Mystics. Only two games separate the five from eight seeds, and just one game sits between the eight and ten seeds. The three teams seemingly out of the playoffs at the moment are the Sky, Wings, and Sun. The Atlanta Dream have Alicia Gray at guard. Gray has been the most improved player frontrunner all season, and her continued growth is crucial to the Dream's playoff hopes. Gray is in top three of nearly every major statistical category for Atlanta, including leading the team in points at 18.7 per game, third in rebounds at 5.5, third in assists at 3.9, and third in steals at 1.2. She's been an all-star for three consecutive years, won an Olympic gold medal with the 3x3 team in 2021, but is to make this jump is deep in her nine-year career is special. The Dream have lost in the first round of the playoffs the past two seasons. Gray's first 2 years with the team, as she now looks to continue to perform in order to make a deeper playoff run. The Valkyries have Tiffany Hayes. Since Kayla Thornton's season-ending injury to her left leg, the Valkyries have desperately needed someone to step up and replace her, team leading 14 points and 7 rebounds per game. They will maintain no single person can make up for Thornton's production, but Hayes will carry a heavier burden for the moment. With a very young and heavily intentional team, Hayes' voice in the locker room will also go a long way. She is the reigning sixth player of the year and has more playoff experience than nearly all of her teammates. If Golden State wants to make the playoffs in its inaugural year, Hayes will have to step up and lead them there. It's no secret that they're going to talk about Caitlin Clark for the Indiana Fever. While they've managed to win during her absence, she remains the key to their playoff aspirations. Before she went down with the groin injury, they had sidelined her since July 15th with the right quad injury. Her stats dropped a bit compared to her rookie season, but Indiana averages 87.8 points when Clark is on the floor, while just 83.4 without her. Players such as Kelsey Mitchell and Ari McDonald have stepped up their scoring over the past several weeks. So now if you add in a healthy Clark and her 16.5 points per game, the Fever's high-powered offense should be stronger. The Aces, obviously, they have Asia Wilson, but Jewel Lloyd is a big help. She's leading the team in minutes, points, rebounds, and steals, and is third in assists for Asia Wilson. Yet Las Vegas is fighting for a spot at the bottom of the playoff standings. If the Aces want to find any postseason success, Aja will need help, and a lot of that comes from Jewel Lloyd. On paper, it seemed like Lloyd would fit perfectly next to Wilson in the Aces system after she arrived via the blockbuster trade that also sent Kelsey Plum to the Los Angeles Sparks. But so far, Lloyd is averaging 11.3 points, the fewest since her rookie season, and a career-low 1.8 assists per game, as the Aces simply just need more from her. The Sparks run a five-game winning streak, as they'll need Cameron Brink to step up and help. Having found their form offensively and boasting one of the top units in the league since the All-Star break, Brink made her return from a 13-month ACL recovery in just four games, and she could be key to helping them make a formidable team to face in the playoffs. Take the Sparks win over Indiana on Tuesday. She was held scoreless but finished with a plus-minus of +12 off the bench, largely due to her defensive presence in the paint with her five blocks in just 16 minutes, which ties her career high. Obviously, the offense will come, and the Sparks have plenty of scorers in the meantime, but if she can propel them into an even middle-of-the-pack team defensively, there'll be a dangerous group come fall. Dejanay Carter getting traded to the Lynx is huge for them. It's an obvious choice after she was traded before the deadline. She bolsters their depth on the wing, especially important after Carly Samuelson's season-ending foot injury, provides more defensive versatility for a squad that already boasts the league's best defensive ratings. Carrington's impact was on full display in her Lynx debut Tuesday, where she tallied 13 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals in just 18 minutes off the bench as they got a win over Seattle without Nafisa Collier, their leading player. The Lynx also sought to add Carrington, hoping her experience making deep playoff runs with Connecticut helps. Time will tell whether the 5'11" guard is a missing piece for a team that was only one play away from hoisting the trophy last October. The Liberty are going to look to turn to Emma Messiman. Messiman brings tremendous offensive versatility down low for New York, capable of scoring off the dribble, spotting up, or operating out of the high post with high efficiency and basketball IQ. Defensively, she's another true rim protector who can switch one through four. She uses her length to disrupt passing lanes and block shots. In just two games, she is fourth on the team in scoring, averaging 12 points on 45% shooting and 2.5 rebounds per game. Although Messman hadn't played in the WNBA since 2022, she had been dominating overseas, including winning 6 EuroLeague championships and 3 EuroLeague MVPs. Her arrival in New York comes as perfect time as Liberty navigated a plethora of injuries, including Breonna Stewart's knee. When they are at full strength, Messman gives them incredible depth in the front court. Kalia Copper is going to be huge for the Phoenix Mercury. It's one of the flashiest off seasons, bringing in Alyssa Thomas and Satu Sabali. But the most important player of their playoff hopes is the one who has been in Phoenix the longest. She remains the main option for the team in recent years, took her game to the next level in 24. She's playing next to Thomas, who has forced her way into the MVP conversation this year, and to figure out how to adjust her game alongside her new teammates. After missing the first month of the season because of knee and hamstring injuries, she is finding a rhythm, averaging 17.4 points per game over her last 5 games. She put up 22 against the Fever in the same game in which Thomas scored a career-high 32. It's an example of how dangerous they can be together. Seattle Storm are going to turn to Dominique Malanga. The Storm made one of the biggest moves before the trade deadline, adding all-star guard Brittany Sykes from Washington to give them 4 2025 all-stars, more than any other team in the league. Although Sykes should help Seattle at both ends with her defensive versatility and ability to get to the free throw line, it's Malanga, the number 2 pick in April, who gives the Storm the most upside for a playoff push. She's the youngest player in the WNBA, as she won't turn 20 until November. She's grown dramatically over the course of her rookie season after being in and out of Noel Quinn's rotation the first half of the summer. Since the All-Star break, Malanga's averaged 9.1 points per game and 6.5 rebounds per game in 18 minutes, finishing the night at times ahead of former All-Star center Azzi Magbegor. Malanga's size and athleticism gives Seattle a dimension the team's many All-Stars don't offer. And lastly, the Mystics are turning to Kiki Irifin and Sonia Citron. The biggest reason Washington is such a surprise this year is that they are in the playoff picture because of this rookie duo. Both players made the All-Star team, and for a decent amount of the early season were in contention for Rookie of the Year. Citron and Irifin are still second and third in the league in rookie scoring, respectively, but the team's offense has slowed significantly over the past few weeks. And now with Brittany Sykes gone, and the Mystics should push the full reset button and hand the keys to their rookies. The schedule is kind to Washington through the final month of the season, so both players need to step up to help crack the top 8 and secure a spot in the postseason. But that is what is so fun about the WNBA, is the league is at the right size to where every single team has multiple difference makers and every single team is fighting for a playoff spot. I mean, we heard the disparities. There are just 3 games separating the number 2 from the number 5. There are just 2 games separating number 5 from number 8. And there's 1 game separating 8 from 10. This league is absolutely insane. Parity is what makes it exciting. And the playoffs are going to be unreal. So excited for Detroit to be back in the WNBA mix starting in 2029. Wish it was a lot earlier. Hopefully they bring back the Shock. And hopefully they're just as good as they were in the late 90s and early 2000s. And we get a chance to see them pushing for a playoff spot, pushing to be back in the WNBA finals soon, but gear up for a great WNBA playoffs because it's going to be fun. We're going to get into our picks after the break, but we got more Mid Madness coming your way on 95.3 WBCK.
95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. It's time for our picks. But before we dive into those, we got to talk about last week. Last week, well, it was nothing more than an average week for your boy. Went 3-3 as the Tigers dropped their series to the Twins. The Storm also lost to the Fever, along with Rebecki losing to Duncan in the Octagon. Meanwhile, the Dream took down the Mystics. The Aces were victorious over the Valkyries, and Tyara was able to take down Park in the Octagon. 3-3 gets me up to 46-26 on this rendition of Picks. We'll start a new rendition once the NFL season gets started in week, the college season gets started in week one. So, of course, loading up a whole new set of picks this week. You can play along and let us know your picks using the chat feature in the WBCK app and see how well you do against me as I try and continue to show that I know ball a little bit. I mean, just a little, right? I mean, 46 and 26 is pretty good, right? I would say I know what I'm talking about most of the time. Maybe you're a little bit better. It's time for us to find out if that's true or not. Starting this week, we're going to go right back to that Tigers and Twins. Granted, this is going to be a weird series. We won't know how we did on this until the not next week's episode, but the episode after that. This is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday next week. But we're going to start with game one, which is on that Thursday. All of these games are at Target Field in Minnesota. Charlie Morton will take on Bailey Ober. 51.8% chance for the Twins to win game one of this series. A 7:40 first pitch. Morton 7-9 on the year. Ober 4-6. 5.20 ERA for Morton. 5.38 for Ober. 1.52 on the whip for Morton. Ober 1.41. 107 innings for Morton. 97 for Ober. 114 hits each. 107 strikeouts for Morton just compared to 78 for Ober. 49 walks compared to 23. Morton has more. And Morton only given up 16 home runs while Ober has given up 23. Looking at game two on that Friday, the Tigers have the 50.7% chance to win as Casey Mize will get on the mound against undecided. That's an 8-10 first pitch. Byron Buxton still leading all three categories on the pitch or the hitting side of things for the Twins. Meanwhile, the pitching leaders, Joe Ryan, all three, 2.83 on the ERA, 10 wins on the year with 141 strikeouts for those Twins. At the 8-10 first pitch next Friday. The Twins are 54-60 on the year, 30-24 at home. Meanwhile, the Tigers, who are 66-50 so far on the year, are 29-27 on the road. Game three, next Saturday, Chris Paddock taking on Zebby Matthews. 4-10 for Paddock on the year. Matthews is 3-3. A 4.91 ERA for Paddock, 5.17 for Matthews. Paddock giving up 124 hits in 121 innings. Meanwhile, Matthews giving up 43 hits in 38 innings. Paddock, 19 home runs and 88 strikeouts, while Matthews has 48 strikeouts and 4 homers. A 51.7% chance for the Tigers to be victorious in game three compared to just 48.3% for the Twins. It's a 7:15 first pitch. And finally, game four going down on Sunday. Jack Flaherty on the mound, 6-11 on the year, 4.56 ERA and 120.1 innings, 106 hits, 147 strikeouts on 20 home runs. Tigers have just a 48.6% chance to win this game, while 51.4% for the Twins. A 2-10 first pitch. The matchup predictor says we'll split. I say that's wrong. I say the Tigers win the series 3-1. There's only one way to find out, and I just pray that they don't tie. But we'll find out all of 2 weeks away. But I got my faith in my hometown Detroit Tigers, who let me down the last time they played the Twins. So I'm praying that it does not happen again. Going into our next game, we're stepping on the hardwood. The Sparks are taking on the Valkyrie. It's going down to the Chase Center in San Francisco. The Valkyries are 8-5 when they play at the Chase Center. Meanwhile, the Sparks are 9-6 on the road, 14-15 on the year. They are excited to have Cameron Brink back, although the Valkyrie is going to be without star guard Kayla Thornton for the rest of the season. The Sparks are a 1.5-point favorite at the moment, and I'm going to have to switch my mind. I was going to go with the Valkyries, but the injuries and the lack thereof on the other side. The Sparks also lead the series already 2-1, and the road team has won every game in this series, so why would I go against the trends? Trends normally pan out. So I'm going to say that the Valkyries are going to drop yet another game to 14-16 and be even so more crawling for a playoff spot in their first year, as they currently hold a lead over the Sparks because they had the tiebreaker over them. Tying this up for the Sparks would be huge, and I think they know that. That plays a part in this game, and the Sparks are going to come out on top over the Valkyries. Getting over into our next WNBA game, this one going down on Sunday, 12:30 p.m., ABC, ESPN Plus at the Barclays Center. The Liberty will welcome in the Lynx. The Liberty are 10-3 at home, 19-10 on the year. Meanwhile, the Lynx 25-5, and they're 10-4 on the road. Nafisa Collier is out until at least August 19th, along with Jessica Shepherd. But on the other side, Brianna Stewart out until at least the 28th. Nayara Sabali out until at least the 19th. Kennedy Burke out until at least the 12th. They're still giving the New York Liberty a 55.2% chance to win this game because they're playing at the Barclays Center. The Leaks won game one. I'm not going to be crazy and think they aren't going to win game two. They've been playing absolutely phenomenal, and they just picked up Dejanae Carrington. So even if they don't have Nafisa Collier, they still have some very good players that are going to put it together, because let's not forget about the stud buds, okay? Let's do our thing. I'm rocking with the Lynx. I think they come out with another victory. There's only one way to find out, and that's after they play the game. So we're going to get on over to talking about our next game on the hardwood. This one going down between the Atlanta Dream, which nobody expected to be here, and the Phoenix Mercury, who everybody still expects to be here. The Atlanta Dream, 19-11 on the year, 9-7 on the road, will be taking on the Phoenix Mercury, 19-11, 11-4 at home at the PHX Arena on Sunday, 6 p.m. on NBA TV. Maya Caldwell, Ryan Howard, and Brittany Griner all expected to maybe return for the Dream. Mercury don't have anybody sitting. The Dream are 2-0 in this series, so who am I to think they aren't going to go 3-0? You're crazy if I don't think that they collect the sweep here. They have a 53.8% chance to win this game, while just a 46.2% chance for the Mercury. The Mercury are at home, which is going to make this a little bit tougher, but the Dream did beat them at home on July 23rd before beating them in Atlanta on August 1st. They beat them by 23 on the 1st, and they beat them by 11 on July 23rd. So it doesn't look like they have any troubles playing against the Mercury. I think that that trend continues. I think that even if they do have those injuries, they have all the pieces behind them to still be great, starting with Alicia Gray, who is in fact an MVP candidate. So how do I go against an MVP candidate? I don't. Give me the Dream to win yet another game and continue to make that push to be the top seed in the East for that playoff run. Is there a half game behind the New York Liberty? Now we're stepping into the octagon for our last two matchups of the weekend. Odey Osborne, who is 13-8, will be stepping in against Steve Ursag. This will be on ESPN, ESPN Plus, as this is a fight night going down to the UFC Apex on Las Vegas, or in Las Vegas, Nevada. Prelims start at 4 p.m. The main card is at 7 p.m. later tonight. In the bantamweight division, Osborne stands at 5'7", 125 pounds, 33 years old, 73 inches on the reach. He's a southpaw fighter. Meanwhile, Ursag, 12-4, 5'8", 125 pounds, 30 years old, 68 on the reach, and he's an orthodox fighter. And meanwhile, those fight odds have a 600 favorite money line for Ursag, a plus 400 for Osborne. It is expected to go over a round and a half, but is favorited to not go the distance. So it would be a matter of who's going to land better strikes here. Both of these fighters prefer to be standing. They like to box. They like to throw kicks. So who's going to land more punches? Who's going to be able to get in and get their strikes and get out? Who's going to keep themselves out of harm's way? That's so tough with this, because when you look at it, the significant strike lands per minute, and the accuracy is definitely in favor of Urseg, but all of the metrics are in favor of Osborne. So this is one of those fights that is almost even, but I think I'm going to go with that accuracy and then the age difference for Urseg out of Australia to take down Osborne out of Jamaica, which is going to get us into our last pick of the weekend. This one is going to be the main event. It's a middleweight fight going down between Roman Doladidze and Anthony Hernandez. Anthony Hernandez, 14-2. He's a 6 foot, 186 pounds, 31 years old, 75 inches on the reach. He's an orthodox fighter. He has a 68.56 accuracy for his significant strikes. Meanwhile, he's going against Doladidze, 15-3, 6-2 for his, or 6'2 in his height, 186 pounds, 37 years old at 76 inches on the reach. He's an orthodox fighter as well. His significant strike accuracy is just 48.8%. Hernandez is a 350 favorite in comparison to just a 270 underdog for Doladidze. It is an even for this fight to be under 2.5, while it's a negative 210 for it to go over, but it is not expected to go the distance at a negative 175 favorite in honor of that. I'm going to take Doladidze because sometimes the favorite doesn't win. That gives me the Tigers, the Sparks, the Lynx, the Dreams, Doladidze, and Urseg as we get into the weekend. We're going to get ready for sports soon here, so we don't have anything going this weekend, but coming up soon, we do. Enjoy your weekend. We got more Mid Madness coming next week on 95.3 WBCK.
Join Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.